This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now it's Red Eye Radio with talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Dan Mandis. This is Red Eye Radio.
Appreciate you being here, and man, all kinds of news to talk about this morning, and so glad you could make it here on Red Eye Radio. Bloodshed in Chicago has America asking the question, and it's a very good question, where in the hell is Black Lives Matter and the NAACP? You know what's going on in Chicago. Certainly you folks in Chicago know what's going on there. So we've got a story for you that is amazing. We also have the ongoing saga of Donald Trump versus Ron DeSantis. Of course, you may or may not know by now, the Supreme Court has ruled against Donald Trump in the battle over his documents related to the January 6th commission. We have all kinds of news to tell you about tonight. Finally, of course, Joe Biden and his big press conference today. I've got to tell you that I listened, probably the only person in America who listened to the entire thing. Excruciating syllable after excruciating syllable. It was long. It was boring. It was confusing. And I think that we all now know the reason why Biden doesn't really like to do a whole lot of these press conferences, because, frankly, he didn't come off sounding real well.
It's been a year of challenges, but it's also been a year of enormous progress.
Not really.
We went from 2 million people being vaccinated at the moment I was sworn in to 210 million Americans being fully vaccinated today. We created 6 million new jobs. More jobs in 1 year than any time before. Unemployment dropped. The unemployment rate dropped to 3.9%.
So a lot of the things that Biden said, especially in the first 10 minutes, because the first 10 minutes, it was basically Biden talking about everything that he has, and put this in air quotes, everything that Biden has accomplished over the past year. So I would say a few things regarding that one soundbite. And by the way, I do have a lot of audio for you to play, because I know that most of you were not able to sit through the entire press conference. But I would say that, yes, that number of vaccinated folks is impressive. But to say that he is responsible for all those vaccinations is silly, because Donald Trump created Operation Warp Speed. He engaged with the private sector to get the vaccines developed and handed the baton over to Joe Biden, and folks got vaccinated. Let's not forget, by the way, that he missed his own vaccination goal early on, Joe Biden did. Now, as far as the economy goes, to be honest, you heard him talking about how he and his administration created, you know, all of these jobs. Well, he really didn't. To be honest, Joe Biden inherited a nation that was reopening. So, of course, there are more jobs now than when he took office. He didn't create jobs. Jobs were reestablished and the economy restarted. You also heard him brag about infrastructure. And I'm just going to be honest, I'm not necessarily as impressed by that as the left is, just because I'm not. Infrastructure is something that, one, even the Republicans wanted to do. But even this particular infrastructure was really, really, really expensive. And there's a lot of budget hawks who didn't like the infrastructure package. So for Joe Biden, I'm not necessarily seeing a lot that he has to brag about, at least right now. He also, by the way, talked about making more testing kits available.
We're also increasing testing. Should we have done more testing earlier?
Yes.
But we're doing more now. We've gone from zero at-home tests a year ago to 375 million tests on the market in just this month. If you buy a test at a store, your insurance will reimburse you. On top of that, We're making 1 billion at-home tests available for you to order and be delivered to your home for free. Just visit covidtest.gov.
So he knows that the testing and the lack of tests was a major issue. You know, they told companies, Biden told companies to force employees to get vaccinated. You know, the mandates, or make them take tests every few days. Now, the problem was there were no tests. So that was a major confidence killer for Joe Biden. The American people looked at the fact that there was no testing available, and they thought, yeah, this is the same guy that had that epically poor pullout from Afghanistan. The whole thing, the whole administration, frankly, just seems incompetent. And by the time all of these tests finally get to your home, the Omicron variant will have plateaued and be well on its way down. He also, by the way, talked about Build Back Better, his massive human infrastructure plan. You remember that.
In fact, my plan cuts the deficit and boosts the economy by getting more people into the workforce.
Right.
That's why 17 Nobel Prize winners for economics say it will ease long-term inflationary pressure. The bottom line, if price increases are what you're worried about, the best answer is my Build Back Better plan.
Well, here's the thing, Joe. Build Back Better is simply not going to pass. So I'm not entirely certain why he was even bringing up this failed legislation. But you remember that the CBO came out and said that it was not necessarily going to be paid for the way that Biden was saying that it was going to be paid for, and that it would actually add $160 billion to the national debt, and that it would ultimately cost $1.7 trillion in spending. So I'm not entirely certain why he was bringing this up like it's some sort of an accomplishment, because it's not. It's literally dead on the Senate floor. Past the House, of course, because we know that the House loves to do anything that Joe Biden wants them to do. But the other thing is the way Biden and the Democrats were describing this thing is that it was all paid for and would not add to the deficit. But if all the programs were made permanent, it would cost like, what, $5 trillion, if I remember right? So they were screwing with the numbers and they weren't being honest. You remember, and I feel like December called, they went their topic back. I understand this. But Budget Watchdog said that this plan would add trillions in spending and it would be terrible for the economy. And again, look, I don't want to regurgitate all that discussion, but I guess my point is that Biden is talking like this thing is somehow going to magically pass the Senate, and it's not. By the way, he also said that he was going to possibly break up the Build Back Better plan so that they can debate specific issues, which, by the way, is the right thing to do. But I want to make sure that you understand. So the first 14 minutes of Joe Biden's speech before he ended up taking some of these questions from the reporters, which, by the way, was an epic fail. Wait till you hear that audio. But his 14-minute speech, right at the beginning, he was bragging about vaccines that he did not create. He was bragging about testing kits that he failed to get to the American people. He was bragging about jobs he did not create. And he was bragging about a massive spending plan that simply is not going to pass. There's a reason why Joe Biden is being hidden by whoever it is that is running his administration. This speech, this big old press conference, did nothing, in my opinion, and I'm a conservative, big shock. So this speech, at least to me, didn't really do anything to instill any confidence in the Biden administration. None whatsoever. Now, coming up next on Red Eye Radio, wait till you hear the reporters' questions. And by the way, former President Donald Trump also checking in on his response to Biden's speech. It's all straight ahead. My name is Dan Mandis. This is Red Eye Radio.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio, appreciate you being here. Dan Mandis in for Gary and Eric this evening. Appreciate you being here on Red Eye Radio. We're kind of breaking down Joe Biden's bad awful speech here at the tail end of his bad awful week, at the tail end of his and America's bad awful year. By the way, you can find out more about me on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, all three at Dan Mandis Show. Now, I'm also a talk show host, by the way, in Nashville, Tennessee. I host the morning show on Supertalk, 99.7 WTN. You can find out more about that at 99.7WTN.com. So in the previous segment, we were talking about his opening speech, if you will. It was kind of like his monologue, Joe Biden, the president's. And then came the reporter's questions. Because to be perfectly honest, I don't think anybody really had any high expectations of the president's monologue, if you will, the president's speech. I mean, let's face it. This has been probably the most disastrous first year of a president in the history of first years of presidents. It really has. And so he, as I mentioned at the tail end of the last segment, he was talking about a lot of the things that he's not responsible for, and he did not mention the things that he is responsible for, like, for example, inflation and the issues on the southern border, the failed pullout from Afghanistan. All of these things are what Joe Biden did do. You want to talk about the massive division that we have here in America? Hashtag thanks, Joe. Now, the reporters, everybody wanted to know, how were the reporters in the room going to treat Joe Biden? Were they going to softball the president? Because we all know how this goes. We all know that Joe Biden more than likely wouldn't even be in this seat behind the podium that he was behind today if it wasn't for the very cocoon-like protection of the media. And so the big question going into this press conference was, how would the media treat the president of the United States? Because we know that they've been incredibly frustrated over the past year because of, one, a lack of press conferences. Number two, really a lack of access to the president. So first reporter out of the box came this question. And let me tell you something, friends, it really was right between the eyes.
And the nation's divisions are just as raw as they were a year ago. Did you overpromise to the American public what you could achieve in your first year in office? And how do you plan to course correct going forward?
Why are you such an optimist? I didn't overpromise. And what I have probably outperformed what anybody thought would happen. The fact of the matter is that.
Now, I want to make sure that you heard that. Biden actually said that he felt like he outperformed everyone's expectations. Now, I could frame that in a different way. I knew, and a lot of you knew, that Joe Biden was going to be an epic train wreck. So in that sense, perhaps, yes, he did outperform because we all knew that he was going to be bad. Did we know that Joe Biden was going to be this bad?
And what I have probably outperformed what anybody thought would happen. The fact of the matter is that we're in a situation where we have made enormous progress. You mentioned the number of deaths from COVID. Well, it was three times that not long ago. It's coming down. Everything's changing. It's getting better. Look, I didn't overpromise, but I think if you take a look at what we've been able to do, you'd have to acknowledge we made enormous progress. But one of the things that I think is something that one thing I haven't been able to do so far is get my Republican friends to get in the game of making things better in this country.
Wow. So you heard that right. The president is talking about the Republicans. When in reality, I believe that we all know that it's his own party that's been unable to get things done, right? Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. By the way, I think we also all know that the president is challenged in telling the truth. Dude tells one lie after another. And so there is, that wasn't actually the first of his lies, but that was one of many lies that he told earlier today. When he says the Republican Party is essentially blocking everything that he wants to do, in reality, it's his own party. In reality, it's Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They blocked pretty much everything that Joe Biden wants to do. They blocked getting rid of the filibuster. They blocked Build Back Better, to name just two. By the way, that reporter also mentioned that the nation's divisions are just as raw as they were a year ago. Well, I guess my question would be, why is that? Biden will refuse to accept any accountability for those divisions. But he might want to look at his own speech in Atlanta, because that was a clear example of why divisions are so deep here in America, calling Republicans Jim Crow supporters and the like, mandating vaccines, telling people they don't deserve to be able to earn a living without a vaccine, not to mention the lies that the president has told over the last year about immigration, inflation, and the rest of it. So that was basically the tone and the tenor of the entire speech. Then he, of course, continued to blast Republicans.
I did not anticipate that there'd be such a stalwart effort to make sure that the most important thing was that President Biden didn't get anything done. Think about this. What are Republicans for? What are they for? Name me one thing they're for.
I've got a few things. And by the way, this seems to be a very familiar line for the president these days. What did the Republicans stand for? I've mentioned this before. I'm going to mention it again. Joe, I know you have memory issues, so I will remind you what the Republicans are for. Hopefully you're listening out there on WMAL in Washington, D.C. The Republicans are for small government, low taxes, strong borders, sovereignty, low crime rate, high numbers of law enforcement, and a strong military, freedom, effective military pullouts from countries like Afghanistan. Joe, that is what the Republicans are for. And for the love of me, I cannot understand why it is that Biden keeps going back to this, what do Republicans stand for? And again, that statement in particular still continues to ignore the fact that it was Democrats, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who blocked his legislation, protected the filibuster, blocked Build Back Better. So Biden now is saying that he, this is one of my favorite parts of the speech. Biden says he's going to try to help the Democrats in the midterms.
I'm going to be out on the road a lot, making the case around the country with my colleagues who are up for re-election and others, making the case of what we did do and what we want to do.
Wow.
What we need to do. And so I don't think I've overpromised at all, and I'm going to stay on this track.
Please, Joe. Please go out and help the Democrats that are up for re-election. And by the way, be sure to bring that record low approval rating with you. You and Kamala Harris. Now, he went into this speech, according to Gallup, just 40% of Americans approving of the job that he's doing. So let's just review. And I know that you get beaten down with polls every single day. I do understand that. He's lost some Democrats. He's lost a ton of independents. Now, that's not good news for Biden. That's not good news for the Democrats. Now, some will say that Trump had a lower approval rating, and it just depends on the poll. But remember, Donald Trump was being dragged through the mud by the press and the Democrats over the Russian collusion lie. And that was a lie, so it's hardly the same thing. Just so much here with Biden's speech. We've got a lot more straight ahead. Dan Mandis here, in for Gary and Eric. This is Red Eye Radio. Red Eye Radio, Dan Mandis, in for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you listening to Red Eye Radio. Man, there is just so much news to talk about, of course. Joe Biden coming off his press conference. And obviously, that is story number one across America today, not only in the mainstream media, but also for talk radio as well, certainly. Fox News, right before the break, I played you this one piece of audio where the president, and it's interesting because I'm sort of reading the reaction online from political pundits. I'm going to be honest. I don't really like to read the reaction of, you know, people who are out there giving their opinion because I don't want it to necessarily affect my opinion. But I'm going to tell you this because it's interesting. One of the things that I thought of immediately when the president said that he was outperforming what people thought that he would do, I thought that has got to be a trigger. That is going to be a trigger for people who hear the president say that and think he can't really be serious. And sure enough, this is Senator Ron Johnson.
No, listen, he's living in a fantasy world. He really is. But here on planet Earth, when you spend trillions of dollars we don't have, when you pay people not to work and reduce the supply of goods, that's going to cause inflation. Now, I was amazed at the notes I had. I didn't get to watch the entire press conference, but he said that he outperformed expectations. Again, I'm not sure what planet he's inhabiting, but again, here on planet Earth, what he has governed is a huge radical leftist.
Yep.
He's not the moderate that the press said he was going to be. He's a radical leftist. He's opened up the borders. He's caused the inflation. We have catch release now at the border, but also in our criminal justice system, the embarrassing and dangerous surrender in Afghanistan. I mean, it is a record of failure. It's almost surprising that his approval ratings are as high as they are.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, again, I'm going to mention this probably a few times over the next several hours. But when Biden said that he was outperforming expectations again, for those of us who expected Biden to screw up, yes, he has certainly screwed up far more than even I thought that he would. But man, you look at some of the reactions online and people do really understand that the president did not have a good day. And I think that when you listen to the reporters' questions, it is abundantly clear that even though they asked him some tough questions, they really weren't as aggressive as they would be with, say, for example, former President Donald Trump. And even the former president, he made mention of that when he was doing some interviews with some media about his new book. And I'm going to get to those comments here in a little bit on Red Eye Radio. One of the things that I thought was interesting was that Biden kept going back to the Republicans, and for whatever reason, he refuses to accept any real accountability. Now, I realize that for Biden, that's pretty much been his MO for many years. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to screw up. He's going to lie, and he's not going to accept accountability. And listen, I'm not just being a partisan hack. I know that some of the, you know, hate listeners out there that like to listen to quote unquote conservative talk radio think that I'm just being a conservative hack. I'm really not. I mean, ask all of those independents how they feel about Joe Biden. I mean, last poll that I saw, 74% of independents thought that Joe Biden was doing a terrible job. Now, this was a particularly peculiar exchange, as one reporter asked about Biden not reaching out to Republicans. I want you to listen very closely because ultimately what it does is it catches Joe Biden, wait for it, in a lie.
Some Republicans who may be open to major changes on voting rights, for instance, like Mitt Romney, he says he never even received a phone call from this White House. Why not?
I like Mitt Romney's a straight guy. He's One of the things that we're doing, I was trying to make sure we got everybody on the same page in my party on this score. And I didn't call many Republicans at all.
Wait, so I'm a little confused because, and I played you the audio, in the previous segment, I played you audio where the president was blaming Republicans for not getting stuff done. We all know that was a lie. It was the Democrats and Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. But if you didn't even pick up the phone and call him Mitt Romney or some of these other moderates, well, then how can you blame the Republicans if you didn't even pick up the phone? So doesn't that basically catch Joe Biden in a lie? Of course it does. So for the president, I'm just going to tell you, if you were looking for a speech that was going to bring a little bit of confidence back to the White House and the Biden administration, let me tell you something, friends. This wasn't it. Now, I do have a lot of audio bites from the speech that I'm going to pepper in throughout the night. I'm not going to spend all my time in this hour playing speech from playing audio bites from Joe Biden's speech. There's a lot of other things that I do want to get to tonight. We all know that there is a lot of bloodshed that's going on across the country, specifically in Chicago. Coming up next, I'm going to play you some heartbreaking audio from the city of Chicago because of some shootings there that happened here in the last 24 to 48 hours. And people in Chicago, they are asking some very serious and very specific questions that you are going to want to hear. It's all straight ahead. Dan, in for Gary and Eric, this is Red Eye Radio.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, Dan Mandis in for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you listening. We all know about the bloodshed in great cities, once great cities across America, especially in Chicago. And over the past 24 hours, heartbreaking, just absolutely heartbreaking, as five kids have now been shot in Chicago. There's a guy who I follow on social media. He's a pastor, and his name is Corey Brooks, and he's basically doing a lot of these podcasts and videos and so forth on the rooftop. I believe it's the rooftop of his church, but where he's doing this commentary is not as important as what he's saying. You see, the reason why he is on that roof in frigid temperatures is to ask the question, what the hell happened to the city of Chicago? And why is it so violent? And he's asking many, quite frankly, provocative questions. I love this guy, Pastor Corey Brooks. Now, most of the media is ignoring this guy, and to be perfectly honest, they shouldn't. But the reason why the media ignores Pastor Corey Brooks, he's black, is because he asks some very important questions, especially after the shooting of these five kids in Chicago. Listen.
Tonight, my heart breaks. One of the reasons why I'm on this roof and in this tent is to bring to you the awareness that you need to know about the violence in the city of Chicago. And I can't believe that I'm having to tell you this. But in Chicago, over the last 24 hours, there have been five children who have been shot. The ages of these shooting victims in Chicago since noon today are a girl 11, a boy 15, a boy 16, another boy 16, and another girl 17. That's five children shot in less than 24 hours. If this happened in any other community in America, it would be total outrage. And I mean outrage. And the question that I want to ask is, where is Black Lives Matter? Where is, unfortunately, I have to say it, the NAACP? Where are all these organizations that say they support and are committed to black lives, but when we have five young people shot, no one is saying a word. And just like I said, if this was any other community in America, there would be so much outrage. There would be so much noise being made. But because it's on the south side of Chicago, because it's some little black boys and little black girls, nobody really gives a damn. That's all I want to say.
You know, there's part of me that when I hear the words of Pastor Corey Brooks, what else do you say after that brilliance? As this black pastor is watching all of this happen on the south side of Chicago. To be perfectly candid, it's a little hard to follow that, but he brings up some great points. Where is Black Lives Matter? Where is the NAACP? Now, one thing I would say, he does talk about, you know, these quote-unquote children that have been shot. Again, they're on the south side of Chicago. One thing I would say is, unfortunately, in Chicago and in other places across America, you do have 15 and 16-year-old kids, sometimes kids as young as 13 and 14, running around the streets of Chicago with guns, running from police and shooting at each other. So when you hear, and I'm not, please understand, I'm not correcting or even arguing with Pastor Brooks, but I am also very cognizant of the fact that there is problems. There are problems in these communities. Because when you've got 13, 14, and 15-year-olds running around the south side of Chicago at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, shooting guns at each other and running from the police and sometimes firing at police, there is something wrong, and he is absolutely correct. Where is Black Lives Matter? Where is the NAACP? I've got another silent group, by the way. The community at large. The black community. You know, some of these folks, they riot and loot and vandalize and burn cop cars when some guy gets shot by police. Oftentimes, by the way, it's a justified shooting. And it's a free TV for everyone. But innocent kids get shot, like an 11-year-old girl, and nobody cares. And so I would ask the question, where is Black Lives Matter? Where is the NAACP? And where is, and I, you got to put this in air quotes, because you know what I mean by this. Where is the community at large? Where are the people taking to the streets and saying, no more? These are the guys that are doing this. This guy pulled the trigger. 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 That's a gangbanger. That's a gangbanger. That's a gangbanger. And we support the police to get these guys off the street. See, that's what needs to happen. Why doesn't it? Why doesn't the community stand up for itself? In all of this, of course, on the forefront of the conversation regarding Democrats who are soft on crime. I mean, look what's happening in Chicago. Look what's happening in other Democrat-run cities across the country. I know that you know this. I know that you know what's happening in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in Seattle, in Portland. I don't need to go on, and you don't need to be beaten over the head with this storyline every single day and every single night. But you see, the reason why people like me keep harping on narratives like this is because the lives of that 11-year-old girl matters. And why does the life of that 11-year-old girl matter more to me than the Black Lives Matter organization or the NAACP? Because if the life of that 11-year-old girl truly mattered, the Black Lives Matter organization and the NAACP would be out there trying to figure out who the hell pulled that trigger. They would be supportive of the police who are investigating that girl's murder, and they would be asking the question, why is it that 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old boys are running around the streets of Chicago and other cities with guns, shooting at each other and the police? Valid question, don't you think?
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio, with talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Dan Mandis, this is Red Eye Radio.
Appreciate you being here. Yes, indeed. And for Gary and Eric, always appreciate the opportunity to fill in on Red Eye Radio. If you'd like to find out more about me, I host a morning show in Nashville, Tennessee on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, 6 to 10 Eastern, 5 to 9 Central. You can find out more information on me and the show on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page, also on Instagram and Twitter, all three at Dan Mandis Show. Joe Biden's press conference yesterday, a lot of reaction, a lot of audio, and people, you know, if you were looking for this seminal moment where America was going to collectively say, okay, now we understand and we have confidence in Joe Biden. We have confidence in his decision-making ability. We have confidence in his cognitive skills. Joe's our guy. Well, that didn't happen. No, as a matter of fact, I don't know. I suppose it could have gone worse. I mean, he could have passed out in the middle of the press conference, so it could have been worse. But Joe Biden's press conference today was not good. I've got a few select cuts that I do want to play for you. By the way, some other stories out there. You've also got the Senate going back and forth yesterday on voting rights legislation. Ultimately, the attempt to kill the filibuster was denied again, but not before a lot of drama. So I do have that story for you as well. And just a few sound bites that I do want to play for you from Joe Biden. Certainly, there has been a lot of, again, drama, a lot of people reacting to what the president said. One of the things I thought was interesting is one reporter asked Biden about the now controversial, as you all know, a very controversial statement that Biden made about Bull Connor and George Wallace. Now, you remember back in Atlanta when he did say this. I'm going to play this for you probably at least twice during this particular segment.
So I ask every elected official in America, how do you want to be remembered? Do you want to be on the side of Dr. King or George Wallace? Right. Do you want to be on the side of John Lewis or Bull Connor? Do you want to be on the side of Abraham Lincoln or Jefferson Davis?
Ah, Lord, he sounds like a car alarm. Anyway, so that was Biden in Atlanta, and a reporter stood up today, and you're going to see this story out there. What was the question that made Joe Biden really angry? Well, it had to do with the audio bite that I just played. Listen.
You know, you campaigned and you ran on a return to civility. And I know that you dispute the characterization that you called folks who would oppose those voting bills as being Bull Connor or George Wallace. But you said that they would be sort of in the same camp.
No, I didn't say that. Look what I said. go back and read what I said and tell me if you think I called anyone who voted on the side of the position taken by Bull Connor that they were Bull Connor. And that is an interesting reading of English. You I assume you got into journalism because you like to write.
What? So I don't know if you understood the last probably, what, 10 seconds of what Biden said?
Connor, that they were Bull Connor. And that is an interesting reading of English. I assume you got into journalism because you like to write.
Okay, whatever. So here's the thing. Obviously, Biden, this is a touchy subject, but also the reporter wasn't saying or accusing Biden of calling people Bull Connor or George Wallace. I want you to listen to the reporter's question one more time. Again, listen close.
You dispute the characterization that you called folks who would oppose those voting bills as being Bull Connor or George Wallace, but you said that they would be sort of in the same camp.
No, I didn't say that. Look what I said. Go back and read what I said.
So obviously, Biden just didn't understand what the reporter was saying, because the reporter was trying to bring up that he disagreed with the characterization that the president was calling people who supported the filibuster Bull Connor or George Wallace. But the reporter was asking or making a statement that he was likening people to Bull Connor or George Wallace, or putting them on that particular side. So Biden, he lost his head for, frankly, no reason at all, because it sounds to me anyway like he didn't quite understand what the reporter was saying. And again, remember, this is what the president said in Atlanta.
So I ask every elected official in America, how do you want to be remembered? Do you want to be on the side of Dr. King or George Wallace? Do you want to be on the side of John Lewis or Bull Connor? Do you want to be on the side of Abraham Lincoln or Jefferson Davis?
So the president obviously knows. And by the way, the ultimate question that the reporter asked, rather meekly, by the way, after getting, you know, dressed down by the president, the reporter basically asked, did you really think this was going to work? And Biden talked about how, well, I was really passionate. And when you're really passionate about voting rights, then you say these things. And that was basically it. One reporter, though, actually questioned the competency of the president.
There are deep questions among Americans about the competence of government, from the messy rollout of 5G this week to the Afghanistan withdrawal, to testing on COVID. What have you done to restore Americans' faith in the competence of government? And are you satisfied by the view of the competence of your government?
You know, the reporter, can I just say that the reporter was like tiptoeing around, because for the reporter to say, you know, there are concerns about the competence of your government, let's get more specific. People are concerned about the competency of the president, and people are actually wondering if the president has all of his mental faculties. And I'm sorry, but that's just a fact. Now, I am not even going to bother to play for you it was a several minute long rambling answer of Joe Biden, where he defended the pullout of Afghanistan. He defended the testing kits and all the other things that, frankly, we've all heard before. So it's not worth airing, because it's just a long, tired ramble of more of the same from Joe Biden. But this reporter asking Biden to his face about his competency was pretty amazing. Now, former President Donald Trump, because everybody's talking about this press conference, right? Former President Donald Trump was asked about Biden's press conference, or perhaps he couldn't resist. He was in the midst of an interview regarding his new book, and he either was asked his opinion or felt the need, because it is Donald Trump, to give his opinion. And so basically what he said was he felt like, well, you know what? The media didn't really ask him direct questions. The media sort of apologetically tiptoed around the major issues that are affecting your life. One of the things I thought was interesting was Biden actually threw Donald Trump right under the bus. I'm not exactly certain why, because this conversation about where we are a year into the Biden administration is not about Donald Trump. Wait till you hear what the president had to say about the former president coming up next on Red Eye Radio.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on sleep apnea. Diagnosis of sleep apnea. The process of diagnosing sleep apnea is easy and painless. After taking a health history and performing an exam to rule out other possible causes of your poor sleep, your doctor will have you complete a sleep study. Although years ago, sleep studies had to be conducted in a sleep lab, now they can be performed at home while you sleep in your own bed. The results of the sleep study will allow your doctor to determine whether you have mild, moderate, or severe sleep apnea based on the number of times your breathing stops or slows while you're asleep. As a professional driver, you want to catch and begin treating sleep apnea before it becomes serious. If you're diagnosed with sleep apnea, you may lose your medical qualification to drive a commercial motor vehicle until you are receiving successful treatment. By beginning treatment while your sleep apnea is mild, you may be able to avoid medical disqualification. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
And for Gary and Eric, my name is Dan Mandis right here on Red Eye Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. Well, there's a number of different stories that we're following for you tonight. Of course, Joe Biden's big press conference coming up at the bottom of the hour at about 35 past. We are going to talk about this battle between Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and former President Donald Trump. And it's all about 2024, so you're going to want to stay close for that. Again, that's after the bottom of the hour. Now, as far as Joe Biden's big press conference today, it's like 2 hours long. And it felt like five, I'm just going to be honest with you. The long, rambling, you know, very breathy pauses and, you know, Joe Biden, just his answers just went on forever. And oftentimes they didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. Now, one of the things that he said was, because we all know, I mean, listen to this. According to a Politico Morning Consult poll on Wednesday, 37% of respondents give the president an F for the first quarter of his presidency, his first year. By contrast, a meager 11% give Biden an A thus far, while 20% give the president a B. Nearly a third of the country put Biden in the C or D category, and 18% giving the president a C and 12% give him a D. Now, I don't know what those people who gave the president an A are smoking. I mean, there's some people, you know, I was thinking about something just a few minutes ago. You know, we here in America, we seem to be accepting of lesser than. We seem to be accepting of lies. We seem to be accepting of stupidity. We seem to be accepting that our leaders are just so incredibly dysfunctional and it is killing our country. And we're just accepting it. And those people that give Joe Biden an A, they are so blinded by their partisanship and they are so blinded by their hatred of Republicans and conservatives and Donald Trump that their opinion literally does not matter. That's what I would say. Now, I could understand somebody giving Biden a C. I could understand that. I would disagree, but I could understand that. I would vehemently disagree with giving the president a B. I'm right there in the F category. Of course, if you know anything about me, you know that I'm not necessarily someone who's going to be appreciative of much of what Joe Biden has to offer. But it's not about partisanship. It's about knowing and firmly believing that America is better under capitalism and conservative values. And that is most certainly not what Joe Biden is bringing to the table. So for whatever reason, Biden decided to blame Donald Trump for his own inability to get things done. Listen.
Did you ever think that one man out of office could intimidate an entire party where they're unwilling to take any vote contrary to what he thinks should be taken for fear of being defeated in a primary? I've had five Republican senators talk to me who've told me that they agree with whatever I'm talking about for them to do. But Joe, if I do it, I'm going to defeat it in a primary. We got to break that. It's got to change.
All right. So I would like to ask Joe Biden to name those five senators, because I don't believe that they exist. See, here's what's going on. What's going on is Biden is unable to get his agenda accomplished. And so he's blaming everyone other than himself and his own party. But what really doesn't make any sense is that you've got Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema that are standing in the way for Biden and the Democrats to get their way. Do you know how many people are threatening Joe Manchin right now and Kyrsten Sinema with primary opponents? I mean, let me tell you something. The Democrats are going after them big time. So I find it ironic, don't you think, that Joe Biden is saying, well, you've got Donald Trump and he is controlling the party and people are afraid to stand up to Donald Trump and, you know, they're going to get primaried and so forth. You know what I would say to that? I don't believe that the party is being, quote unquote, held hostage by Donald Trump. I really don't. I believe the party has embraced MAGA values because they saw what the policies of Donald Trump brought to America. So you can sit here and say, I would say to Joe Biden or anybody else, you can sit here and say, well, the Republican Party, the conservatives, they are beholden to one man. It's a cult of personality. It's actually not. It's not a cult of personality at all. It's about the policies. That's what it's about. It is about the policies. So if you're a Republican and you vote for the policies of Joe Biden and the Democrats, well, that goes against what the Republican Party stands for. It doesn't go against what Donald Trump stands for, per se. The Republican Party has become more conservative because we saw from 2016 to 2020 what conservative values and MAGA principles did for our country. So Biden is just flailing about during his press conference today, blaming everyone but himself. And he can sit here and he can say, well, the Republican Party is beholden to Donald Trump, but it really isn't. And remember, in the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about the battle between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. But Biden might also want to understand that it's not Trump who was threatening these senators. There's been a reaction to what Biden has been doing to America. And I'm very specific when I say that what Biden is doing to America, because I believe that what he is doing to America is not good for America. I mean, all you've got to do is look at inflation, look at our borders, look at what he's done with COVID and the lack of testing. It goes on and on. Now, do I believe that Trump is a factor within the Republican Party? Sure, I do. But do I think that he is, you know, somehow the key master to the Republican Party? Not really. I mean, look at the governor's race in Virginia. The Republican there kept Donald Trump at arm's length and won. What he did was he embraced Trump's policies. But he didn't necessarily embrace Donald Trump, the man. And that's kind of where the Republican Party does seem to be going. We'll talk about this and a whole lot more straight ahead. My name is Dan Mandis, in for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you listening to Red Eye Radio. Radio. Dan Mandis in for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you listening. I'm going to be here tonight and tomorrow night. And folks are asking me on social media. By the way, you can find me on social media. Do me a favor, if you would, and go like the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. And people are asking me on social media if we're taking calls tonight. Unfortunately, we cannot take calls just because of the way that we're having to do the show this evening. And it's just the behind the scenes technical stuff doesn't matter. The bottom line is that we're unable to take phone calls tonight. I do appreciate you listening. And if you have something you want to say to me, feel free to hit me up on either Twitter, Facebook, Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. You can also find me on Instagram, and that as well is Dan Mandis Show. And I always appreciate the opportunity here on Red Eye Radio. Now, Ron DeSantis has been in the news a lot lately. Now, you know that he is the Florida governor. And just in the headlines on Wednesday, there was this massive influx of headlines that Ron DeSantis, the governor of the state of Florida, was trying to, quote unquote, shield white people from discomfort in this newest legislation. It's all about critical race theory. Now, here's what's going on. What's going on is the media seems to be fanning the flames of this battle between former President Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. There's a lot being made about this battle. And so this is one of those stories about critical race theory. And we all know what critical race theory is. Critical race theory is essentially, and people can disagree all they want, I'm right and they're wrong, but critical race theory is being taught in schools. It's just being, you know, thinly veiled as something else. But for the governor of Florida, he's doing everything in his power to stop critical race theory from not only being taught in Florida schools, but also from corporations forcing critical race theory type teachings in their corporate culture as well. Because as we know, you have some of these corporations that are forcing their employees, specifically their white employees, to do things like apologize for their race and skin color, just all of this nonsense. And so earlier today, or I guess yesterday on Wednesday, you did have these headlines that DeSantis was trying to shield white people from discomfort in his newest legislation. Now, he started down this road of critical race theory and talking about everything that's been going on with critical race theory.
The San Diego Public Schools did a training where they accused white teachers of being colonizers on stolen land and told them, quote, you are racist, and quote, you are upholding racist ideas, structures, and policies. And they recommended that the teachers undergo, quote, anti-racist therapy. The Arizona Department of Education created a, quote, equity toolkit, claiming that babies show the first sign of racism at 3 months old and that white children become full racists by age 5. Santa Clara County Office of Education denounced the United States as a, quote, parasitic system based on, quote, the invasion of, quote, white male settlers, and encouraged teachers to cash in on kids' inherent empathy in order to recruit them into political activism. And a Philadelphia elementary school forced fifth graders to celebrate black communism and simulated a black power rally to, quote, free Angela Davis from prison. And at that particular school, 87% of students fail to achieve basic literacy by graduation.
So that is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis a while back talking about the absurdity, the stupidity of critical race theory. And so now his bill, what he's encouraging the state legislature to do, would prohibit public schools and private businesses from making white people feel discomfort when they are teaching or training employees about discrimination regarding America's past. In other words, when you teach about slavery, don't position it as white people are still oppressing black folks and white people need to apologize and this teaching of white privilege and all this nonsense. All of that would not be allowed in Florida if the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, is able to get his legislation passed.
Piece of legislation for the upcoming legislative session called Stop Wrongs Against Our Kids and Employees Act, the Stop Woke Act.
Oh.
And it's something that, and this will do a number of things that are very important. One, it will put into statute Department of Education's prohibition on CRT in K through 12 schools. No taxpayer dollars should be used to teach our kids to hate our country or to hate each other.
I mean, look, we all know that this is an issue that conservatives care deeply about. Now, during this particular press conference, DeSantis laid out in great detail, again, examples of CRT, and he also said that he is empowering parents to take it on locally. And how does he want to empower parents? Well, listen.
We are going to be including in this legislation giving parents a private right of action to be able to enforce the prohibition on CRT, and they get to recover attorney's fees when they prevail, which is very important.
Yeah, this is from WFLA.com. It takes aim, the governor's legislation. It takes aim at critical race theory, though it doesn't mention it explicitly. Florida's Senate Education Committee approved the bill on party lines on Tuesday, with Republicans in favor and Democrats arguing the bill is not needed. It is. DeSantis called critical race theory crap last month and said that he would seek legislation that would let parents sue schools and employees sue employers if they were subjected to its teachings. The bill, again, also bans critical race theory in the workplace as well. So that's one of the things that DeSantis is doing related to critical race theory. The other thing that he's doing is he is taking aim at elections. He's wanting to do everything that he possibly can to bring back confidence in America's elections. Now, CNN had a guy named David Jolly on, and this was yesterday, on Wednesday, and he was talking about this rather awkward relationship these days between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. It all has to do with 2024 policies that Republicans and conservatives care deeply about. Listen.
On the Florida Election Security Force. Look at what Ron DeSantis is doing. He's not actually selling Donald Trump's big lie. He's not out there saying Donald Trump should have been elected and the certification shouldn't have gone through. He's not carrying water for Donald Trump. What he's doing is he's taking the most powerful part of that, the big lie, and using the part that benefits Ron DeSantis, not Donald Trump. This is about 2024 and about securing Ron DeSantis' pathway to the GOP nomination.
Well, putting aside the whole big lie nonsense, that Florida Election Security Force is actually a great idea. And it's right up there with other states that have also tightened up their elections. Now, what does it do? Cleans up voter rolls, investigates election crimes, prohibits haphazard and unsecure ballot drop box locations, and increases the penalty for voting violations restrictions on collecting mail-in ballots. In other words, ballot harvesting. So when you look at the things that are happening across the country, as far as I like to say, hijinks and shenanigans that are going on within these elections, and how the Republicans in Republican states where the legislatures are conservative, they're doing whatever they can to bring back some credibility in these elections. And so when you look at ballot harvesting, when you look at these unsecure ballot drop box locations, when you look at election crimes and cleaning up the voter rolls, these are things that the Republicans want to do. Ron DeSantis is absolutely right to have this Florida Election Security Force. It would be a team specifically trained to deal with election fraud and security issues related to elections. It's going to cost like $6 million in year one, and it's going to have about 50 employees in six offices. Now, the state legislature in Florida still has to approve it. The whole point is this. Whether we're talking about illegal immigration, which DeSantis has also been incredibly aggressive on, cleaning up the voter rolls, voter election and integrity. You've got the situation with critical race theory. These are all things that Donald Trump has been incredibly vocal about, but so have conservatives and Republicans across the country. Ron DeSantis in Florida is doing something about all of these. And that's important because what he's doing is he's setting up, hopefully, a track record of success. He's taking a cue from Donald Trump without explicitly embracing Donald Trump. And it's setting up a showdown for 2024 and the primary election. Now, you and I, you know, we all know that DeSantis has come out and he said that, well, you know, and I'm not going to run in 2024. He came out and he actually said that. Now, whether or not you believe him is, well, anybody's guess. I mean, I personally believed him at the time, but I also believe that it's a very simple thing to say that he's changed his mind. There's no problem with doing that whatsoever. Now, it is abundantly clear that DeSantis is getting under the skin of one Donald Trump.
I've taken it. I've had the booster. Many politicians, I watched a couple of politicians be interviewed. And one of the questions was, did you get the booster? Because they had the vaccine. And they're answering it like, in other words, the answer is yes, but they don't want to say it. Because they're gutless. You got to say it. Whether you had it or not, say it.
That is Donald Trump talking about Ron DeSantis, the governor, after he was asked this question.
Have you gotten the booster?
So I've done whatever I did, the normal shot. And, you know, that at the end of the day is people's individual decisions about what they want to do.
Yeah. So that was DeSantis basically theoretically not wanting to admit that he had the booster. Now, first of all, that is his own personal business. But whatever, that is a conversation for another day. I think it was either yesterday or the day before, Trump came out and said that DeSantis has a dull personality and no charisma, among other things, according to several different publications. So now Trump is actively going after Ron DeSantis because it is abundantly clear that the former president knows that DeSantis is a threat. The Hill actually put it incredibly succinctly, and they were right on in how they describe this relationship between Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, and the Republican Party. What they said makes a lot of sense, and it's coming up next right here on Red Eye Radio.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. Dan Mandis in for Garen. Eric, appreciate you being here. So what do you make of this whole battle between Ron DeSantis and former President Donald Trump? Now, first of all, one of the things that is going on is DeSantis was asked earlier today, yesterday, he was asked, would you throw your support behind Donald Trump? You see, part of what the media is doing is they're fanning the flames of this little battle that's going on. And so DeSantis basically said that would be very difficult to do. I mean, let's be honest. You've got Trump calling DeSantis gutless. Trump came out and said that DeSantis had a, quote, dull personality and no charisma. And so the media immediately goes running to Ron DeSantis, knowing that he's heard of this, heard of the attacks. And then they ask him the question, hey, would you support the former president? I mean, come on. It is obvious what's going on. I believe that Donald Trump is a little terrified, as a matter of fact, of Ron DeSantis. And the reason why he's terrified is because he knows that Ron DeSantis is popular with Republicans. The Hill put it this way. One Republican consultant with ties to Florida said that part of the interest in DeSantis as a future presidential candidate stems from the perception among many in the party that the Florida governor is effectively Trump without the baggage. He's a little more polished, I think, he says. He's got the Harvard credentials. He served in the military. He's the governor of the third largest state, but he can still speak the language of the MAGA crowd, the consultant said. With Trump, and we all know this, with Trump, there's still a lot of drama. So I think it probably worries him that there is this other guy who's getting a lot of attention. And that is true. The Hill put it very succinctly, and this battle no doubt will continue all the way to 2024. We'll return next. Dan, in for Gary and Eric, this is Red Eye Radio.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio with talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. For Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Dan Mandis. This is Red Eye Radio.
Thank you very much for being here. Yes, indeed. In for Gary and Eric. Always an honor to fill in on the mighty Red Eye Radio. We've got all kinds of stories for you this morning. Of course, we have all kinds of audio bites from Joe Biden's big press conference that happened yesterday. A lot of reaction to what the president had to say. So I do have that. Bloodshed in Chicago has America asking, where is Black Lives Matter and the NAACP? The Supreme Court has ruled against the former President Donald Trump in the battle over his documents related to the January 6th Commission. That is a very big deal for the former president. So we do have a lot of ground to cover. Appreciate you being here again, and you can find out more about me on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter. I do host a morning show in Nashville, Tennessee on Super Talk 99.7 WTN from 5 to 9. Feel free to check it out. Now, Biden had a massive press conference yesterday. Now, the reason why his press conference was so massive is because he rarely does these press conferences. And so the more that he spoke, and it was like a two-hour press conference, the more that he spoke, quite frankly, the worse that he sounded. Now, I've been playing throughout the evening some select audio bites from his press conference, and there's a lot there. I mean, some people will say, well, the president didn't say a whole lot. He actually said a lot. And I got to tell you that he didn't instill a lot of confidence, at least for the American people. I would be willing to bet that if there's some polling out there that asks the American people, how did you feel about the president's press conference? I think the majority of people will feel about the press conference the way that they feel about Joe Biden. Big old thumbs down. Now, there was a moment where the president was asked, because of voting rights and all this nonsense about the filibuster, the president was asked about the midterm elections. And he was asked, do you feel like the midterm elections will be credible and legit given what the Republicans are doing in states like Texas, in states like Georgia? So CNN, you've got Anderson Cooper and some other folks, including Dana Bash, and she is a journalist and a commentator. And Cooper asked her the question, what do you think about what the president said? And they played a little bit of what Biden had to say. Then he threw it to Dana Bash, who called the president's comments jarring. Listen to what Biden had to say.
Well, it all depends on whether or not we're able to make the case to the American people.
And so the question was very simple. In this age of the big lie, put that in air quotes, right? The big lie. In this age of the big lie, where Donald Trump is out there saying every time he goes out that the election was rigged, it was stolen, and the media apoplectic every time the president, the former president, says these things, now you've got Joe Biden casting doubt, throwing shade on an election that hasn't even happened. Now, my Nashville listeners will tell you that I've been predicting just this thing. I've been saying for a long time, you know what's going to happen. They know, Biden and the Democrats, Chuck Schumer and all these folks, they know that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema will not allow the filibuster to be destroyed. So the Democrats and Joe Biden will never be able to pass this voting rights legislation, which means that ultimately they will lose the majority in the House and the Senate. And when they do, they'll have the ability to say that the Republicans stole the election by changing the election laws in states like Texas, in states like Georgia, and all across the country. So Biden and Schumer and the Democrats know they're not going to be able to do this. They're not going to be able to nationalize the elections. So the only thing that they can do is they can set up a situation, because politics is a chess game. Make no bones about it. So they're setting up a situation, a narrative, a scenario where they can say, well, we lost. And the reason we lost isn't because of all of the Biden issues. No, we lost because the Republicans stole the election. Listen closely. That's what Joe Biden is saying, and that is ultimately what Dana Bash will say in reaction to what the president says.
No matter how hard they make it for minorities to vote, I think you're going to see them willing to stand in line and defy the attempt to keep them from being able to vote. I think you're going to see the people we're trying to keep from being able to show up, showing up and making the sacrifice it needs to be made in order to change the law back to what it should be.
Wow.
Dana, what did you make of his response?
Well, particularly the first part, Anderson, what he said was actually the entire thing, but the first part was probably the most jarring to hear a president of the United States who is not Donald Trump even suggest ahead of time that an election isn't legitimate.
I mean, there you go. So I'm not one of those guys that's going to sit here and say, you know, flag the tape and all that. But it is so obvious to me that this is what they've been trying to do all along. Now, part of the news cycle today is the fact that Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, they were on the Senate floor trying to once again destroy the filibuster. And once again, you have Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema standing in the way. But there was a whole lot of drama. This was yesterday on the Senate floor, a very dour sounding Chuck Schumer talking about the filibuster.
Amazingly enough, my colleagues, none of them are here to hear it. Our Republican colleagues don't even acknowledge that we have a crisis. To date, I don't know if any of you have, but I have not heard a single serious defense of these laws from Senate Republicans. Mm. They don't come here to the floor to defend what's going on in the states. If there's no effort to suppress the vote, why are states from Texas to Montana restricting the number and hours of polling places? Why have states like Florida and Texas made it harder to register to vote? Is that not suppressing the vote? We have diverse views about whether the filibuster today in 21st century America is a good thing or a bad thing. And there are some in our caucus who believe it helps bring us together. I don't see that evident at all. And I think the majority of my colleagues would agree with that.
All right. So that is Chuck Schumer. And you know what's funny? Because I could sit here and Gary and Eric also, we could all sit here and go over this again and again with these laws in the various states. But in some places, they've actually expanded the hours. They've added extra days, Saturdays. But the issue is that the Democrats have gone so far to the other side and said that what Republicans are incorporating, these supposed Jim Crow laws, that there really isn't much to talk about. You know, Schumer's complaining that the Republicans won't defend what's happening in Georgia and Texas and Montana. You are accusing Republicans of incorporating Jim Crow laws. I mean, you can't go full on accusation with Bull Connor and Jim Crow and expect the Republicans to show up, can you? No. Everybody knows what's going on. The American people know what's going on. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell answered the accusations with accusations of his own.
Their bill is stuffed with strange policies that have zero relationship to ballot access. It's a sprawling takeover of our whole political system. Our colleague from New York will try to kill the character, the institution he is supposed to protect and to serve.
Look, Republicans want free and fair and credible elections. That's it. And the man that stands in the way, Joe Manchin, was asked by reporters if he was worried about being primaried. Love, love, love Joe Manchin's answer.
Supporting a possible primary challenge.
I've been primaried my entire life. That would not be anything new for me. I've never run an election. I wasn't primaried. It's West Virginia. It's rough and tumble. We're used to that. So bring it on.
Senator, do you believe your party has the right priorities at this point? They're focusing on changing the filibuster rules, trying to pass this big electoral bill. There are a lot of concerns about inflation. There are a lot of concerns about COVID that you've expressed. Your party leaders in the White House have it right now.
Well, let me just say this. I know what the West Virginia people believe, and my colleagues. I know what I hear from my friends around the country. They're concerned about inflation. It's real. This is not something made up. It's real. It's hurting them. And basically COVID. It's extremely hard on everybody. And getting people back to work has been extremely hard. Businesses opening back up has been extremely hard. These are things we should be working on. This is things we should be coming together, cohesing around, basically. How do we fix the challenges we have in America? We don't need to make up any new ones. We have enough already there for us. So,
Earlier this evening, last night, yesterday, whatever you want to say, a few hours ago, the Senate ultimately failed, of course, to destroy the filibuster. And again, it's not like they didn't know that Joe Manchin was going to stand his ground. Kyrsten Sinema standing her ground. They did. They both killed the attempts by the Democrats to destroy the filibuster in yet another major blow to the Biden administration and the Democrats. My name is Dan Mandis in for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you listening to Red Eye Radio.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Justin Ho. Stocks had another downbeat day on Wednesday. The Dow and the S&P gave up just shy of 1%. The NASDAQ fell almost 1.2%. Procter & Gamble says sales rose 6% last quarter, even though it raised prices across its portfolio of household products. That's a sign that consumers are willing to pay higher prices, especially for household essentials. P&G says it expects to raise prices some more this year to help cover higher costs. The number of new home construction projects rose in December by 1.4%. That's according to the Census Bureau. Permits for new construction were up by more than 9% compared to November. And the Biden administration says it's going to distribute 400 million N95 masks starting next week. They'll be available for free at pharmacies and health centers. I'm Justin Ho with the Marketplace Minute.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio, Dan Mandis here for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you listening. Man, there is just so much reaction to the president's press conference. There is some other news going on. For example, I don't know if you heard this or not, but bad news for Donald Trump, a major blow as the Supreme Court allows the January 6th committee to access his White House documents. Now, you know that the president is, former president, is under assault. You know that you've got this select committee and they're going after the president when in reality, what they're really trying to do is just prevent Trump from running again in 2024. I honestly believe that. You know, when you talk about a witch hunt, when you talk about the fact that they'll do anything they can to go after the former president, this is part of that. But the Supreme Court said that the January 6th committee is correct in looking to procure, find, or get a hold of Donald Trump's White House documents. The ruling was 8-1. And listen to this. All three of Donald Trump's appointed judges voted against the president. The lone supporter of Donald Trump was Clarence Thomas. So apparently they're already getting what they've been looking for. Now, you'll recall that Trump wanted those documents kept from the committee, and he was citing executive privilege. Following the high court's actions, this is from Fox News, following the high court's action, there is no legal impediment to turning over those documents, which are held by the National Archives and Records Administration. They include presidential diaries, visitor logs, speech drafts, and handwritten notes dealing with January 6th from the files of former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows by the National Archives and Records Administration. They include presidential diaries, visitor logs, speech drafts, and handwritten notes, what they will. Now, there's a few things here. First of all, you're talking about notes. You're talking about things that may not state something explicit, but they may be vague notes about something that the committee can turn into something nefarious. See, that's also part of what the committee can do, is they can say, well, what did he mean by this? What did he mean by this? What did he mean by this? And they'll draw their own conclusions because they have a predetermined outcome that they want to have with this investigation. They want to figure out, conjure up a way that they can somehow charge Donald Trump with a crime or figure out a way that he won't be allowed to run in 2024. That's what this is all about. But you see, it's not just about Donald Trump. They're going after anyone in Trump's orbit to try and take them down, whether it's Kevin McCarthy or Jim Jordan or Sean Hannity. It gives them something to focus on other than Joe Biden's own failures. Now, here's my point. My point is, if Donald Trump has nothing to hide, then give them all the documents they want. I believe they're going to take these documents and they're going to read into the documents what they want and, again, try to support their foregone conclusion. But here's the other thing. The more that they do that, the more that they go after Trump, the more that they go after conservative talk show hosts, the more they go after the likes of Kevin McCarthy, Jim Jordan, and some of these other folks, the more they are ignoring what you really care about. And you know what you care about. You care about supply chain issues. You want lower prices. You've got an issue with inflation. You want border security. You want an end to COVID, and you want available test kits. That's what you want, but that's not what they want. No. Seems to me like the Democrats are singularly focused on a few things, and none of them have to do with anything that I just mentioned. I mean, think about it. All you have to do is look at the polling. You look at the polling. Let me ask you a question. You look at the polling. How many people are really concerned with what this January 6th committee is up to? You're not. And most people aren't, because most people are simply trying to put food on the table, figure out how they're going to staff their businesses, and they're worried about the direction of our country. That's what people are worried about. And as far as this whole, I will say, nonsense about voting rights, you name me one person that hasn't been able to vote, just one. You tell me one person who the Republicans have prevented from voting. You can't, because there is not one instance of that happening. Instead of focusing on the things that really affect you. Dan Mandis here, in for Gary and Eric. Thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio. Radio, Dan Mandis in for Gary and Eric. How are you? You can find out more about me on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. Give me a follow if you would, Dan Mandis Show. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter as well. Basically, the socials, all going to be at Dan Mandis Show. So, it's funny. I don't even know. Have I gotten through all of my Joe Biden audio from today? One of the things that I'm fascinated about is that it really does seem like the left is having just as much of an issue with Joe Biden's speech yesterday as the right is. I mean, let's face it, this was a two-hour-long press conference, and I will tell you, just to show that I am not so incredibly blinded by my partisanship that I can't throw Biden a solid every now and then. So I will say that the president this time around, even though I don't think he was particularly impressive, it did seem at least like, whatever it is that he's taking to keep his mind, sort of fresh and, able to communicate. He did hold up well for the 2 hours that he was up there on the stage answering the questions from the media. So from that standpoint, I thought that he was strong. But the problem that Biden has is that the things that he said just didn't make a lot of sense. There were lies. There were obfuscations. There were things that he said that make it abundantly clear that he's not accepting any responsibility or accountability for the issues that have taken place over the last year. Now, there's this next soundbite is from our friends at Mediaite. And it's Van Jones. Now, if you don't know who Van Jones is, he is an operative on the left. He's also somebody who is constantly on the various shows. And so the question that they're tackling, and the reason why I'm playing this, earlier I played you an audio bite of Dana Bash. And she was talking about how it was rather alarming that the president was not willing to say that the midterm elections coming up later this year would be credible because of all of the hijinks and shenanigans that Republicans are doing. And Dana Bash even said that was absolutely jarring to hear the president say that when the Democrats have been screaming about Donald Trump and the big lie for, you know, the past, what, year and a half, whatever it's been. So now Biden is going down the same road. And so even the left, and the point that I'm making is that there is definitely a unifying moment within America. And that is that leftist pundits and conservative pundits all take issue with what Joe Biden said yesterday. Now, one of the things that he said, he was asked a question, a very specific question the president was asked. One, do you believe that Kamala Harris is doing a good job, for example, on voting rights? That's number one. And number two, if you run again in 2024, will she be your running mate? And of course, Van Jones and some other folks, I think this was on MSNBC. No, it was on CNN. And CNN has commentary following the clip. Listen.
You put Vice President Harris in charge of voting rights. Are you satisfied with her work on this issue? And can you guarantee, do you commit that she will be your running mate in 2024, provided that you run again?
Yes and yes.
Okay. You don't care to expand?
Pardon me?
Do you care to expand?
I mean, you know, yes and yes. And so the reporter is like, would you care to expand? I mean, you know, we know I will go ahead and expand for the president. Then I'll let him discuss it. But what I would say is one of the big things that's going on with Biden right now, and part of this narrative is that no one in his administration ever is held accountable. Let me ask you a question. Who was fired after Afghanistan and the horrific pullout of Afghanistan? Who was fired? No one was fired. What about the issue with illegal immigration? Who was fired? No one has been fired, even though we have millions of illegal aliens coming across our southern border. Nobody was fired. So there is a clear lack of accountability. Kamala Harris. So this is where I'm going to take this. Kamala Harris, she had two jobs that Biden gave her. One, deal with the southern border. Figure out why it is, you know, quote unquote, what are the root causes of migration to America? Well, she really hasn't done much of anything. Yes, I know, I know. She had a bunch of businesses, corporations invest in the El Salvador? I think it was El Salvador, right? And so you have the businesses that are having these, you know, whether it's factories, whatever it is, make these investments in these countries there south of our border. And so you've got Honduras, you've got Guatemala. I think it was Guatemala. You had all those businesses starting in Guatemala. And so here's the problem. Kamala Harris thought that that was some sort of a really big answer to the problem. We're going to bring jobs and manufacturing and industry to the to Guatemala. Well, here's the problem. The problem is that a lot of these folks that are coming across our southern border are not from Guatemala. That's a big problem. Because if the problem isn't there, but that's where you're putting the solution, well, that's an issue. We have people coming up from El Salvador. We have people coming up from Honduras. Obviously, we have people coming up from Mexico. We have people coming in from all across the world. Remember all those Haitians that came up towards Texas? And that was a whole big thing where you had these tens of thousands of Haitians. And then you had the Border Patrol that were accused of using whips against these Haitians. That was all a lie. And so Kamala Harris, major failure on that front. Then, of course, the voting rights as well. This reporter was asked the question. Voting rights has failed. Kamala Harris was in charge of voting rights. Is she going to be your VP if you decide to run again in 2024? He says yes and yes. In other words, even though Kamala Harris has a track record of failure in this first year of his administration. Heck, she's got people that are bolting from her staff. So her wing of the Capitol building, people can't get out of there fast enough because of the toxic work culture. So that's a big issue. And Joe Biden, again, par for the course, nobody is accepting or going to have to deal with any accountability or responsibility.
No, there's no need to. I mean, I asked the question. She's going to be my running mate, number one. And number two, I did put her in charge. I think she's doing a good job.
Of course, I guess it depends. I don't know how you define a good job. Obviously, we're about to see that fail. So that's obviously a strains credulity. But very clear there, Van, very clear.
Yeah.
On Kamala Harris.
Well, listen, and I appreciate that. And I think a lot of Democratic voters appreciate that. That's the one time that you don't want to give any a fuzzy, foggy, let me tell you a long story answer, a clear and direct. They are a team. He's staying together. They're going to fight forward. And look, I think that part of the reason that answer stood out so much is because some of the other answers were kind of foggy and meandering. I think you just have to be honest that you can be a foggy, meandering a president, say like Reagan near the end, if you're winning. But if you're foggy and meandering on key questions and you're also not winning, then you've got a real problem. And so I think the real challenge that you have is the numbers are out there that are bad. But this party has got to come together and start putting some wins on the board for this president. They're going to either hang together or they're going to hang separately in the fall.
Yeah, that is Van Jones. And it is abundantly clear that the president has lost CNN. Because you've got Van Jones and some of these other hosts on CNN that are quite frankly asking some very pointed questions and have some very pointed commentary as it relates to Joe Biden and his performance today. Dan Mandis here on Red Eye Radio.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio, Dan Mandis for Gary and Eric. Appreciate you being here. I've had my own issues with COVID over the last couple of weeks, and I got to tell you that for me, just so folks know, I've been vaccinated, had the Pfizer, have not had the booster shot as of yet, but I finally got COVID. I got to Omicron a few weeks ago. And I've got to tell you that it was nasty. I mean, it was really bad. But what I will also say is that as a 54-year-old guy who's never smoked, I'm in pretty good health. This really wasn't, even though it was bad, it wasn't what I would call even in my top five illnesses since I was a kid. Now, I will tell you that the fatigue was just insane. And unfortunately for yours truly, a radio broadcaster, every time I get sick, it goes right to my vocal cords. I don't know why that is. Every time I get sick. And so a couple of weeks ago, I ended up with COVID. Don't know where I got it. But sure as anything, went right to my vocal cords. And I got to tell you that when you get COVID, there's a few things that run through your mind. Number one, where did I get this? I knew that I would end up getting it. I mean, I think haven't we all just pretty much accepted the fact that we're probably going to get COVID? Now, I'm one of those people, and, you know, send your, you know, hate letters and so forth to my social media pages. But I am one of those people that I obviously am talking to you right now. I survived COVID. And it was Omicron, and 99.999% of the folks out there do survive Omicron. As a matter of fact, I don't think anybody, some of the fact checkers out there may have to fact check me on this. I don't think anybody has actually died of Omicron. I mean, Delta is still out there, but as far as I know, Omicron, mild symptoms, different symptoms, but incredibly mild. And for me, my biggest symptom was the fatigue. But I will tell you that I had a very mild case of the very mild Omicron. I was actually able to do my local show in Nashville. Broadcast from home, quarantined for a couple of weeks. My fiance desperately wanted to get me out of the house. But the point is this. I'm one of those people that I wasn't hoping to get COVID. Trust me when I say I wasn't hoping to get it. But I'm a firm believer in sort of natural immunization, you know, getting COVID, having the antibodies and so forth. And so now, I mean, I've had the vaccine. I've now had Omicron. So I have those natural antibodies and I'm debating whether or not to get the booster. It'll be interesting to see if Biden ultimately and Fauci, if they end up sort of expanding what it means to be fully vaccinated, because Fauci, for a while there, the thought was that he was going to end up, he and Biden were going to expand what it meant to be, air quotes, fully vaccinated. Not sure if I'm going to get my booster shot or not, but I will tell you that I find it epically sad as we go down this road of mandates that Starbucks has now scrapped their vaccine mandate after the Supreme Court denies Biden his mandates. Now, first of all, just so you know where I stand on all this, and most of you probably already know where I stand, I believe it's every person's personal choice as to whether or not they get the vaccine or not. I don't believe in mandates. I believe in freedom. But Starbucks came out and they have decided now that they are scrapping, getting rid of their vaccine mandate. We respect the court's ruling and will comply, Starbucks chief operating officer John Culver wrote in a memo to employees. But you know what I would say? I would say that for how long, and I don't know the answer to this question, but how long has Starbucks been mandating that their employees get the vaccine? And how many of those employees got the vaccine when they really didn't want it? And Starbucks was saying, well, it's the president and he is mandating that we do this. Well, I do feel sorry for a lot of those employees, not only at Starbucks, but across the country, who were forced to get the vaccine to keep their jobs, only to have Starbucks and some of these other companies say, never mind.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.